Good morning. Today's daf is Me'ila Daf Ches. We are starting the new parak this morning, the second parak of the Masechta. Our parak is going to continue this discussion regarding Me'ila as it relates to Karbanos. Later in the Masechta, we're going to come back to the topic, not come back, but start the topic of Me'ila as it relates to Kashabed HaKabayis. But our Masechta wants to start with Karbanos, and that's what we did in the first parak. We talked about Karbanos that went awry. What happens if you take your Kachay Kadashim Meshechta B'Tzafon? That's good. That's what you're supposed to do. Sorry. The first Mishnah talks about what if you take your kachay kashim and shechta bedarum? You shecht in the south. So that is a carbon that went awry. And we want to know, how does it affect Me'ila? Is the Me'ila status going to be lifted, or is it going to remain, considering that procedurally you did it all wrong? In our parak, we're going to be talking about where you did it all correct. We're talking now about doing a carbon and doing it correctly. In fact, the first Tosfos on the parak, even before we read a word of Mishnah. So Tosfos writes over here, Chatzos Ha'Of, Ad Hashta Ari B'Din Psulei Kedoshim. Up until now, we were talking about the Psulim, the disqualifications. Masayim Alabahem. At what point in time is it going to be subject to Me'ila? Umikan V'inach V'Elech Ari B'Ksheirim. And from this point going forward, we're now dealing with Kusher. We're dealing with Karbanos that are, in fact, going to be Kusher. So we are now going to be dealing with the correct procedure in terms of dealing with the carbon, and as a result of that, when does Me'ila kick in? When does Me'ila go away? So again, just quick reminders to everybody, when we're talking about Me'ila as it relates to a carbon, so the guiding principle, there's one guiding principle that is clearly exposited in two words, and that's Kachay Hashem. The Torah says that whatever is going to be exclusively put onto the Mizbeach is going to be subject to Me'ila. Whatever is not going to go on the Mizbeach is not going to be subject to Me'ila. That's the rule, and it's just a question then of the application of the rule. When it comes to a carbon ola, the moment that you're makdish a carbon ola, that means that this carbon in its entirety, except for the hide, is going to go on to the Mizbeach. From the moment that you're makdish it, all the way up to the time that you shecht it and do all the avoda and put it on the top of the Mizbeach, it is going to continuously be subject to the din of Me'ila. And only once it's reduced to ashes, then and only then, nasa mitzvaso, and then the Me'ila is going to be removed. That's by carbon ola. By chatas asham, similar but slight differences. By chatas and asham, because the zrikas adam, the sprinkling of the blood, is what's going to allow the kohanim to eat the basar. So therefore, the din Me'ila is going to be removed from the basar, from the point of Zrika. Although, you remember, we had a discussion started on Dav Dalmud Beis and continued through Dav Hei and through Dav Vav as well. And that is that there may be earlier points in which the din of Me'ila is removed. We talked in the first parak, about whether it's Heter Shechita, Heter Zrika, or Heter Achila. But nevertheless, so just in terms of saying simple pshat, right, the time that the Kohanim are allowed to eat the basar of a karban, that's the time that Me'ila is going to be removed from the basar. And finally, just to wrap up our little intro, when it comes to Kashim Kalim, which is actually not going to be part of our discussion today, but I'll just mention it. So by Kashim Kalim, the when you're makdish it, it is not exclusivity towards the Mizbeach. It is mostly going to be consumed by the owner and the Kohanim. So, but nevertheless, so there are parts of a Karban Shlamim that go on the Mizbeach, notably the Imurim, a couple of organs and some of the fats on the organs. So they're going to go on the Mizbeach, but the Imurim only go on the Mizbeach after Zrikas Adam or with Zrikas Adam. Zrikas Adam is, so to say, the Matir, which allows the Imurim to go up onto the Mizbeach. So that means to say that when it comes to Karban Kachim, Shlamim, and the like, so the Din of Me'ila doesn't start until after Zrikas Adam, and it only is going to take effect on the Imurim and on no other part of the carbon. Okay. That's just another general overview of this idea of Me'ila as it relates to Karbanos. We're going to be discussing Karbanos specific to birds. When it comes to birds, birds can qualify only as two types of Karbanos, only a Chatas and an Ola, that's it. There is no other type of bird that can be offered as any other type of carbon. A bird can either come as a chatos or nola. That makes birds simple. And as simple as they are, one of the most difficult mishnayos that we're going to be encountering in the upcoming weeks is going to be mishnayos as it relates to the birds. Okay? It's going to be, it'll be a mathematical challenge. It's coming up a couple weeks from now, more than a couple. But when we get to Masechtas Kinim, which is going to be, I think, immediately after Me'ila, pretty sure. Yep. So we're going to be discussing birds, and despite the fact that there are only two options, it doesn't give you a lot of room for suffix, but nevertheless, you'll see. It's going to be challenging. Anyway, but birds can come only as a chatas or an ola, that's it. Now, in terms of the differentiation between a chatas bird and an ola bird, it's pretty straightforward. When it comes to a chatas bird, so the Kohen is going to be doing, first it will be makdish the bird, then it will be doing malika on the bird. That means he's going to take his thumb, insert into the back of the neck of the bird. So malika is the shechita of birds. It's interesting, and the Gemara notes this all the time. Malika is the opposite of shechita, and I mean that literally. Meaning shechita is done in the front of the neck, and malika is done in the back of the neck. Yet, when it comes to a carbon bird, that's exactly the way the Torah prescribes it. The Torah wants the thumbnail to go into the back of the neck of the bird and basically cut the neck from the back going to the front. And that is the prescribed manner of how to shecht a bird. Once the back of the neck is cut, once the neck is cut, obviously there's going to be blood flow coming out. So what do you do with that blood flow? So for a chatas bird, it's sprinkled on the mizbeach. Where? Below the chutasikra. Now this is the opposite as it relates to animals. When it comes to animals that are offered on the mizbeach, so your chatas animals are sprinkled on the koronos ha-mizbeach, on the horns of the mizbeach, which are on the top of the mizbeach. But when it comes to the blood of the bird, it's sprinkled below the chutasikra.
And Kabbalah, or is it just straight on?
It's straight on. No, right. Excellent observation. There's no Kabbalah. It goes straight on. It goes straight onto the mizbeach. And then after the sprinkling of the blood onto the mizbeach, there's something called mitsui, meaning to say that if there's any blood left over in the body of the bird, then you're going to be pressing that on the mizbeach in order to drain the blood out. What happens to the rest of the bird? Goes to the kohanim and eaten by the kohanim. Unlike an animal where there's something called the imurim, which are organs that are put onto the mizbeach, when it comes to a bird, there are no imurim. They're just simply the blood that is sprinkled and then pressed onto the mizbeach, squeezed onto the mizbeach, and then afterwards, the rest of the bird is going to go to the kohanim, and they're going to be eating the bird. As opposed to the olas ha'of. The olas ha'of is going to be, also, malika will be done to it. There is a difference in malika as it relates to the chatzos bird and the ola bird. The ola bird, the Torah says, yavdil, you make a full separation. The cut is going to be a more dividing cut in the neck of the bird for an ola than that of a chatzos. The Gemara elsewhere, we're not doing it today, but the Gemara elsewhere talks about exactly how the distinction is made between the havdalah of an oaf versus a chatzos bird. But nevertheless, what you're going to do is you're going to be you'll do malika, you'll sprinkle the blood on the mizbeach, and as far as the rest of the bird is concerned, it's an ola. It goes on the mizbeach and it's burned on top of the mizbeach. That is the basic structure of an oaf as it relates to karbanos. And what we're going to be doing this morning in our opening to the second parak of the Masechta is we're going to be talking about me'ila as it relates to birds, and everything was done behechsher. Everything that was done correctly. So what we're going to be seeing in our Mishnah over here is procedurally, everything is done according to the letter of the law, and it's just now a question of when does me'ila kick in, when does me'ila not kick in, etc., etc. Okay, let's begin. Our Mishnah starts off, chatzos ha'of ma'alam ba. So when it comes to the chatzos bird, there's a din of me'ila. Mishe hukdeshu. So we're going to basically have three points in time regarding the carbon of a bird. So we're talking now the point of hakdasha. You sanctify the bird. How do you sanctify a bird? Rashi says it's really easy. You look at the Rashi over here. Chatzos ha'of ma'alam ba mishe hukdeshu bepeh. So Rashi says that you make a remark. You say that this is going to be imbued with kedusha. So amiraso legavoa, this is expression used throughout Shas, that amiraso legavoa, that a declaration towards the heaven, meaning if I'm dedicating something as a karban, it's kemisiraso lehejo. It's the same as actually handing something over to somebody else. Meaning transactionally, when it comes to being makdish something, all you need to do is a verbalization, and that's enough. And that creates hekdesh. So Rashi says, bepeh, afilu inena mimenu mechayim. And now that it's subject to me'ila, once your makdish bepeh, so what does that mean? Rashi says, I'll tell you what it means. That if you get any kind of benefit from it, even while the bird is alive, the bird now is a karban, subject to me'ila, and so therefore any benefit is a violation of me'ila. Kigon shemachra dehotza lechulin. And Rashi gives the example over here, let's say you sell the bird. You sell the bird, so at this juncture, you violated me'ila, and Rashi also talks about hotzia lechulin, that the bird goes out lechulin. Okay, that's an interesting point within Rashi. Rashi seems to indicate, because it's hotzia lechulin, that does not have kedushas haguf. It only has kedushas damim. Otherwise, if it had kedushas haguf, it's a non-transferable kedusha, and it would not be able to be motzi lechulin. Okay. Anyway, so stage number one of the bird is the part of Hukdashu. So once you're Makdish a bird, it's subject to Me'ila. And mind you, we're talking about the Chatzis bird, which means that ultimately the Kohanim are going to be eating the meat. But as far as the Isser of Me'ila is concerned, the Din of Me'ila, once you're Makdish, the Din of Me'ila is there, and it's only going to be removed once the Kohanim are able to eat the meat, i.e., Malika. But that we're going to get to in just a moment. In fact, when I say just a moment, I mean now. Nimlaka. So here we are now at stage two. So stage one is when you are makdishit. Stage two, now we're right next to the mizbech and the kohen's doing malika. So nimlaka huchshiro lihi pasel betvul yomam v'chusu kiporim. So at this point, uvelina. So at the point of malika, so now it is huchshir, it is now more susceptible. Meaning basically at the point of malika, it raises a level in kedusha. It went from having kedushas, I'll call it damim, although it's probably an imprecise way to describe it, because it is a bird. So, but it goes from being something which is designated as a karban, now at the point of malika, it's mamish, it has kedushas karban. Mm-hmm. And at this point of time, nimlaka, once you do the malika, it now is hukshara, it's now susceptible. Lipasa b'tful yom of chusik kippurim. Let's say you have either a tful yom, that means somebody who was tameh, toveled in the mikvah, and is waiting for Harav Shemesh, waiting for sunset. That's what's called the Tful Yom in Halacha. Mechusa Kippurim, he was Tamei with a serious Tumah of Zav or a Zava. So what does that person need to do? They need to go through a 7-day Tahara process. On day 7, Tov on the Mikvah. Wait for Harav Shemesh. And the next day, the 8th day, they're going to bring a set of Karbanos. And until they bring a set of Karbanos, they're not fully Tahor. Now, every step in the way creates a level of Tahara, but the full Tahara is not achieved until day 8 and when you bring the Karbanos on day 8. And so that means that for our Zav and our Zava, we're talking about a Zav Gadol, a Zav Gadola, so that means that on day 7 they have Tovel in the Mikvah. After they Tovel in the Mikvah, they have the status of a Tful Yom. Then they are going to experience Harav Shemesh at night, but because they're required to bring Karbanos, they are still considered a status of residual Tumah Mechusar Kippurim until the next day, until they bring the Karbanos.
Why do we use the critical point by birds as Malika to Shechita, but we don't do that by animals, it's Zrika?
Well, we're getting there. We're getting there. In other words, just, you'll see. Three steps. So, Tvul Yom Mechusar Kippurim Uvelina. So at the point now that you did the Malika, so now this Karban is going to be susceptible to Tumah. If either a Tvul Yom or Mechusar Kippurim were to touch the Karban, it would become Tameh. The word in the Mishnah that's used is Pasul. File that word away for just a little bit. We're going to come back and we're going to focus on what that word means in the very specific terms. And also Lina. And also, because now it has Kedushas Karban, it's going to be subject to Lina. Presumably, that is a reference to the blood. That means to say that if the blood is not sprinkled before sunset, so now it is going to be disqualified. Now, mind you, by the way, that because it's a bird, it's kind of difficult to delay between the Malika and the Zrika Sadam. Meaning, as opposed to an animal where it's Kabbalah Bekos, you're accepting it in a bowl. So then there could be delay. Yeah, right, you can imagine. Over here, when it comes to a bird, hard to really see any kind of delay occurring between the Malika and the Zrika Sadam. Anyway. That is stage number two. Stage number three. Stage number three of the Mishnah, who's a dama. Once you sprinkle the blood, chayav nalav mishum pikol nosef etame vein ba me'ila. So once you do hazah, so now it is edible, and because now it's edible, it's subject to, it's eligible for all the edible disqualifications. Pigol, nosar, tame. These are all disqualifications that apply to a karban once it's rendered edible. Because now the hazah was done, it's rendered edible. And so now, if the kohen had a machshava pigol, so the meat now is subject to this pigol disqualification. It's meaning that if somebody were to eat the meat at this point in time, the person would be chayav kares. No, sir. If the meat was left over beyond the prescribed time and someone were to eat that meat, they would be subject to kares. Tuma, if the meat becomes tame after it was rendered edible. So then the meat would be subject to the disqualification of tama, and again I'll say the same thing. The person who eats is subject to kares. Ein ba meila, and the din of meila is removed once the hazah is done, once the sprinkling of the blood is done on the mizbeach. So now Me'ila has been lifted, and the reason why Me'ila has been lifted, as we said in the beginning of Shir, is because now the Kohanim are able to eat it, and since the Kohanim are able to eat it, so the din of Me'ila has been lifted. Adkan, that takes us through the end of the Mishnah. So basically, we have three stages in the bird vis-a-vis its Kedusha. The point you are Makdish it, that's stage one. Stage two, Malika, that's done. And stage three is Hazas Adam. And in these three stages, basically what we're looking at in our Mishnah is the various levels of susceptibility that it has towards various tumas, disqualifications, the din of Me'ila. Basically, we're looking at the effects of every one of the stages of the Hakdashas of a oath, and specifically a Chatzas Oath. We will discuss tomorrow the Olas Oath. That's tomorrow's Mishnah. With that stated, we start with our Gemara, Ketani Hukshiru Li Pasa Betuyam Uva Mechusar Kippurim Uva Lina. So the Gemara repeats the line of the Mishnah, and the Mishnah says that at the point where you were Nimlak, where you do Malik on the bird, so now it has the Kedusha Sakarban, and now it's susceptible to Tumah. It becomes Tumah sensitive, where if somebody was either a Tvul Yom or a Chusar Kippurim, and they were to touch the bird would be now subject to Tumah. Now, a couple of things in order to really appreciate what we're about to see in the Gemara. The word that is used in the Mishnah to describe its sensitivity is that if a Tvul Yom or a Mechusar Kippurim were to touch it, it becomes Pasul. We know, and here let's just take a moment to go over that which we know regarding Tumah Tahara. When it comes to Tumah Tahara, so obviously the Avatam is a source of Tumah. There are many different Avas of Tumah. I'm not going to go through them at this juncture, but there are many. And then when they transmit the Tumah, so there's always going to be a drop-off in level of Tumah. So if Avatama were to transmit the Tumah to a person or to a Keli, that person or a Keli becomes a Rishon Tumah. When they go ahead and they transmit the Tumah to another item, the only thing they really can transmit it to Minatara is only a food, so then the food becomes a Sheni Tumah. If that food touches another food, Shlishi Tumah, etc., etc. So every time there's a transmission of Tumah, there is a drop-off in the level of Tumah. Well, how far down could it drop off? Oh, wonderful question. It depends what it is. If it is Chulin, so then the lowest it can go is only a Sheni Tumah. So that means one Chulin food that is a Sheni Tumah touching another Chulin food, so there is no longer any transmission of Tumah because it can't drop below a Sheni. However, the more Kedusha that it has, the more sensitive that it is, and therefore the more that it can receive and transmit Tumah. So for example, Truma. Truma now has a level of Kedusha, and so therefore if your Sheni food were to touch Truma, the Truma now becomes Tameh. The correct word to use to describe that is not Tumah, even though it's Tameh, but rather Pasul. Pasul means it's the end of the Tumah station. There is no more that it can go. So when Sheni food were to touch Truma, the Truma becomes Pasul. It is a Shlishi, but because it doesn't go further than a Shlishi, so therefore the correct term to use is Pasul. Let's say for a moment that Rishon food were to touch Truma, the Truma now is a Sheni Latuma, but the right word to describe that Truma now is that the Truma is Tameh. Because not only can it receive Tumah, which it did, but then it can also transmit it again. Because now that the Trumah is now a Sheni, it can go ahead and transmit it to another Trumah, which would then become a Shlishi. Fine. In terms of sensitivity, then you have Kodesh, Karban. Karban is the highest level of Kedusha, and therefore the most sensitive towards Tumah. A Karban can become a Revi L'Tumah. These are the various stages of Tumah as it relates to Chulin, Truma, and Kodesh. Chulin, Sheni, Truma, Shlishi, Kodesh, Revi. All this is articulated in great detail in the beginning of Pesachim. Remember the end of that first parak of Pesachim? So all these halachas are articulated over there. When we say in our Mishnah that the bird, the Chatzos bird after Malika now, which has Kedushas Karban, making it super sensitive to Tumah, what does that mean? So the Mishnah says, and here read the words of the Mishnah really carefully, the Mishnah says that it's Hukshiru Lehi Pasel B'Tvul Yom Mechusar Kippurim. It is that if a Tvul Yom or Mechusar Kippurim were to make contact with it, with the Chatzos bird after Malika, it's going to become Pasel. Pasul meaning that this is the end of the road, meaning that it is going to be a Revi'i L'Tumah and no more than a Revi'i L'Tumah. It will not be able to transmit the Tumah to another Kodesh food because it is Pasul. That is the correct understanding of the Mishnah when the Mishnah says the word Pasul. What bothers the Gemara is that I thought it was a higher level of Tumah. If a Tvul Yom, remember, the Tvul Yom himself was somebody who was came into contact with an Avatuma. He could be on the level of a Rishon L'tuma, our Tvul Yom. What did he do? He toveled in the mikvah. Okay, so there is some Tumah has been removed, but there's still residual Tumah. And that will only be resolved at Harav Shemesh. So he's somewhere in between. It's hard to put a number on it, but he's somewhere in between having been a Rishon to being totally Tahor. So where exactly is he on the Tumah scale, on the Tumah spectrum? Okay, good. So usually, generally, right, I'd rather not give a number, but if I had to, we call him a Sheni L'tumah, right? It's not an absolute to describe him as a Sheni L'tumah, but you understand. He was the Rishon, he's going to become Tar Lagamre, but right now he's somewhere in between. So we could say that he's a Sheni L'tumah. That means to say that if he touches Kodesh, Kodesh should be somewhere around a Shlishi, if you're following.
It shouldn't be the end.
That's exactly the point. The point is that the Gemara is wondering, is curious about, is it shouldn't be the end. As opposed to, if a Shlishi touched the Kodesh, that would be the end. We're talking about a Tful Yom touching the Kodesh, or Mechusa Kippurim. Now, Mechusa Kippurim, easy to wrap our head around. Because what exactly happened with our Mechusa Kippurim? He already had Tvila, he already had Harav Shemesh, he just needs one more step. But that is a lot of Tumah resolution that he had already. So for him, the Mechusa Kippurim, so there it's easier to entertain the idea that if he touches Kodesh, Kodesh is a Revi. Then it's easier to entertain. But for our Tvul Yom to touch it, and the Kodesh only being Pasul and not being Tameh, the Gemara is saying that I have a hard time with. And that's the Gemara's question. So let's see all this inside. I'm going to start again from the Gemara. Ketani, hakuchshur li pasul b'tvul yom v'chusa kippurim, uvelina. Li pasul in, aval etmuye lo. So the Gemara now is just fixated on the word pasul as opposed to tame. So masisa mani rabbanan hi detanya. So the Gemara says, well, I'll tell you what. There are three opinions on this matter. Once we learn all three opinions, we're going to see that our Mishnah is in fact subscribing to one of the three opinions. And, oh, by the way, it happens to be the opinion of the Chachamim, which works out well, meaning that our Mishnah is going to be following the majority viewpoint. What are the three opinions? So they go as follows. Number one, Abishal. Abishal Omer Tvul Yom Tchila Lekodesh. That if you have a Tvul Yom, how is he to be treated? He's treated to be treated like a Rishon as it relates to Kodesh. So that means that our Tvul Yom is going to have the status of a Rishon. Touching Kodesh, what is that Kodesh now going to be? Kodesh is going to be a Sheni. And now what does that mean? So so that means that Kodesh now is going to have, at least when it touches Kodesh, two more stops. If that Kodesh touches another Kodesh, it'll be Shlishi. If that Kodesh touches another Kodesh, it'll be Revi. So obviously there's much more to go. That's according to Abishol. Rav Meir Omer, Mitame Sa Kodesh, Uposel Sa Truma. Rav Meir says that our Tvul Yom, if he touches Kodesh, it'll be Metamis HaKodesh, which means that the Kodesh will be a Shlishi with one more stop on the trip where it can then transfer to becoming another Kodesh, a Revi'i. And when it comes to Truma, it's Posel Es HaTruma, meaning the Truma will be a Shlishi. Basically, the way that Rebbe Meir has it, our Tvul Yom is going to be a Sheni, so that when it touches Kodesh, it'll be a Shlishi, but because it's Kodesh, one more stop along the Truma train. If he touches Truma, Truma can become a Shlishi, but that's it. So therefore, it's Posel as a Truma. So that's the opinion of Rav Meir. V'chachamim ormim k'shem shu posel mashke Truma v'ochle Truma kachu posel mashke Kodesh v'ochle Kodesh. And the Chachamim over here do not take a objective viewpoint, but relative to what he touched. If a Tvul Yom would be touching Truma, posseling the Truma. If he'd be touching Kodesh, he'd be posseling the Kodesh. Which means that if he touches Truma, it becomes a Shlishi. If he touches Kodesh, it becomes a Revi. So rather than giving an objective Tuma value to what he is, it's going to be relative to what he touches. Okay. Adkan, so what we have over here in this Braisa, three opinions. So, and by the way the Braisa works is that it goes Menachomer El Akal. It goes from the most severe position, the most strict position, to the most lenient position. So Abishal obviously represents the most strict position, describing our Tvul Yom as a Rishon LaKodesh. He touches Kodesh, the Kodesh is now going to become a Sheni, obviously puts him at a very high level of Tumah. Masha Enkin, the second opinion of Rav Meir says that he's basically a Sheni, rendering anything that it comes into contact with a shlishi. The truma will be a shlishi, the kosh will be a shlishi. And then the opinion of the chachamim, that if he touches a truma, it will become pasul. So he'll be a sheni vis-a-vis truma. If he touches kodesh, it will be pasul, meaning he will be a shlishi vis-a-vis kodesh. Okay. Hopefully all that was clear. I feel like the more times I say it, the clearer I get on this matter. So that is good. And so what comes out now is our Mishnah, which says that our Tful Yom is touching the carbon burr that underwent Malika, that it will be pasul. So that Mishnah, our Mishnah, is going like the Chachamim, which is fine, which in of itself is fine. Although, to be fair, and I think this is also part of what's driving the Gemara right now, it is a Stam Mishnah, and Stam Mishnah generally follows like Rameir, okay? And Rameir is a second opinion, okay? Anyway, the Gemara, but I'm not sure, quite frankly, if that's what's really driving the Gemara. The Gemara is just simply observing that of all three opinions, our Mishnah only conforms to one of those three opinions. Amar Rava. Continuing in the Gemara, we're four lines down from the top of the Amud Beis. Amar Rava la Abashal malu asu bekachim. Shavin Rabban l'tvol yom kerishon. L'arameir ka'ochel sheni. L'arabban in kevet etaval kalos tuma pasul mashvei tamen la mashvei. Rava basically says, look, you don't have to say any of the above. Meaning, here's what you could say. You could say that what our Mishnah is doing is that our Mishnah is representing everyone's opinion. The opinion of Abishal, the opinion of Rameir, the opinion of the Chachamim. Oh, really? How could that be? Meaning, we just aligned it. And our Mishnah only makes perfect alignment with the opinion of the Chachamim. How can Rava say that our Mishnah is going like all three opinions? So, Rava says it goes like this. Because what the Mishnah is reflecting is the baseline halacha, the halacha min ha-Torah. This is the effects of contact between a Tvul Yom or Mechusar Kaparim as it relates to Karbanos on a Torah level. However, the Chachamim wanted to make safeguards when it comes to Karban. And so therefore what the Chachamim did is they raised the bar as it relates to the level of Tumah. And what the Chachamim did, and now I'm going to reread the Gemara's answer, Amarevel Abashol Ma'la Asu Bekachim. They made Chumras as it relates to Kodesh. Shavinu Rabban L'Tvul Yom Karishon. And what they did is they raised the level of the Tvul Yom. The Tvul Yom, mi ikar hadin, according to strict letter of law, is only going to be post alas hakodesh. But what the Chachamim wanted to do in order to safeguard the Kedusha of Karban, so what they did is they raised the level of Tumah so that it will become even more Tameh. More Tameh meaning, what is more Tameh? Tameh is generally binary, either your Tameh or Tahor. More Tameh meaning that not only the ability to receive Tumah, but also the ability to transmit Tumah as well. And so therefore they raise the bar, where now, think about how high they're raising it. Meaning, according to the baseline, the Tumah of a Tvul Yom is going to be, right, the way Rav is understanding it, is that it's going to be post alas HaKodesh. Relative to Kodesh, he's a Shlishi. And now, how high are we raising him? Two steps up. Meaning he's going to go from a Shlishi up to a Sheni, up to a Rishon. So that any carbon now that he makes contact with Midrabanan is going to become a Sheni, as opposed to being a Revi. That's a significant bump up. L'Rameir ka'ochel Sheni, and according to Rameir, he's going to be like a Sheni, meaning only one bump up. And L'Rabanan kevin d'taval, and the Chachamim say, no, there's no need. There's no need. And the reason why there's no need to make any kind of mala, any kind of chumra over here is because, consider, this person obviously is trending towards Tahara. Meaning, yes, he was Tameh. But at the same time, however, he already toveled in the mikvah. So clearly he's resolving his Tumah. And by the way, also take into consideration, what's there left to do for him? Wait. Meaning, he's done all the action he's needed to have done. And now it's just a question of waiting till Erev Shemesh. So the Chachamim felt that there's no need to put any kind of safeguard measure to protect Kodesh. He already toveled in the mikvah. There was a kalishas atumah. There was a weakening of the tumah. And so therefore, pasul mashvei tamei lo mashvei. So what they did is that they just left it as it is. The Kodesh is going to become pasul, meaning it'll be a revi, and that's it. But they didn't raise it to any degree of tumah. Okay. Huza dama chayavim. Next topic of today's daf. The last topic of today's daf is going to be the following. We now went in our Mishnah to three stages of the birds of the Chatas bird. One, we were Makdish the bird, so giving it a degree now of Kedusha, making it sensitive so that it is now subject to Me'ila. Then what we did is we did the Malika, which now the Malika gives it the Kedusha Sakarban, making it now subject to the Tumah, the high degree of Tumah that we just described. And then Hazas Adam, and sprinkling of the blood, the carbon chatzos on the mizbech. Once you sprinkle the blood, so now you render the meat edible, which on one hand removes the din me'ila from the bird, because you have now sprinkled the blood, so the rest of it is going to be consumed by the kohanim. And also, because now you've rendered it edible, you made it susceptible, eligible for all the food disqualifications. Pigle, no sir. Tame, lina. Good. That is, I didn't mean lina. I take that back. Pigle, no sir, and tame. Okay. With that stated, our Gemara's discussion right now is the following. By the chatzos bird, as I described a little bit earlier, so there are two steps that are done with the blood. One, huzzah. Two, mitzui. After you sprinkle the blood onto the mizbech, then what you do is, if there's any blood left in the bird, you take it and you press it against the wall of the mizbech, draining out the rest of the blood. This is what's called mitzui. You know what our Mishnah did not describe? Mitzui. It's not in our Mishnah. So that's the Gemara's discussion. Why is a mitzui in our Mishnah? So, ahuza dama chayav and mi'ilahu deleka. Sorry, I spoke a little bit too soon. In other words, we're going to get to that point. Sorry. I did preview the Gemara correctly, just the, what's called? We have three lines to cover. Three lines, by the way, which we already covered yesterday, but we get to review again today. Mi'ilahu deleka v'lisura ika. Here's what bothers the Gemara. Like we said yesterday, when you tell me that Mi'ilah gets lifted, the din of Mi'ilah gets lifted, so like I described yesterday, Mi'ilah is like the top level of Isurim, meaning in order to enjoy anything, so first Mi'ilah is removed, but below Mi'ilah you have a general Isur. Mi'ilah is telling me that not only is it Asur, but on top of that also you're going to have all the ramifications of violating Mi'ilah, which means that Keren, Chomish, Karban Asham. So if you're just telling me that Mi'ilah has been lifted, but below that is still an Isser. So when the Mishnah says, you know, after you do Hazah, Mi'ilah is going to be lifted. Well, that just simply means that it's still Usser, which of course can't be, because after you did Hazah, you're good. The Kohanim can now eat it. So what does the Mishnah mean when it says that Mi'ilah is lifted? So Mi'ilah hu deleka v'isira ika, but that would imply that there's still Isser. V'amai hamamona de Kohanim hu, but of course now at this point, Kohanim are supposed to eat it. So what are we talking about? Am Rabbi Chanina liyotzin v'Rabbi Kiva hi. Am Rizrika molos liyotzei delav basachila hi. So the Gemara gives an answer today that it gave yesterday, and that is that our Mishnah could be subscribing to the viewpoint of Rabbi Akiva. The bird happened to have underwent the psul of yotzei. It was taken out of the Azara eye. What about is the Zrika effective to remove Mi'ila even for yotzei? That was our big machlokus that we saw in yesterday's daf between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Lazar says that Zrika does not help for Yotzei. Rabbi Akiva says it does. Our Mishnah is subscribing to Rabbi Akiva, which means that even though the bird underwent the disqualification of Yotzei, the Zrika will still be effective. So that Mi'ilah will be lifted off, but because it went through the pistol of Yotzei, it's still going to be Usser. That is a possible pshat in our Mishnah. Admittedly, a complicated pshat in the Mishnah, but at least it's a possible pshat. Now, let's go back to Mitzui. Sorry. Amarav Huna Amarav Mitsui Khatasov in Ma'akev Didni Rav Huzadama. The Gemara makes a simple observation, and that is Mitsui is part of the Avoda procedure. But it's not Ma'akev, it's not essential. And how do I know that? Because I read the Mishnah. The Mishnah tells me at what point can the Kohanim enjoy the basar of the chatas? At what point is the din of Mi'ilah going to be lifted off of the basar of the chatas? At the point of Azar. Now, even though there is mitzui that still needs to be performed, but mitzui is not ma'akev. It's a mitzvah. It's procedurally correct to do, and it's the right thing to do. But when all said and done, it's not ma'akev. And so, therefore, we don't need mitzui in order to remove the mi'ilah status. Simple observation of Rav Mishnah. Rav Adabar Ava Amar Rav Mitzui Chatzos of Ma'akev. Now, Rav Adabar Ava quotes in the name of Rav. Now, note, by the way, the previous opinion was Rav Huna Amar Rav. So both of them are quoting this in the name of Rav, and nevertheless there's an argument, and it could very well be either they just heard Rav differently, even though it's the opposite positions, or it can always be that Rav himself changed his mind, meaning at one point in his life Rav felt one way, and Rav then reviewed the sugya, and he came to a different conclusion. And each one is just simply reflecting different kufas of Rav's life. That could also possibly be. In any event, V'tni, Rav, Mitzah Dama. Now, if you say that Mitzah Dama is Ma'akiv, what are you going to do with our Mishnah? It's actually really simple. I mean, simple, but not elegant. You're going to change the gears of our Mishnah. Meaning, when the Mishnah says, Who's the Dama? You're going to actually go back to the Mishnah, edit the Mishnah, and the Mishnah should read Mitzah Dama, because we need the Hazah and the Mitzui in order for the Din of Me'ila to be lifted. So what we have over here in our Gemara is a very basic machlokus regarding the essentiality of Mitzui. When you sprinkle the blood of the Chatzos HaOf on the Mizbeach, step one is Hazah, step two is Mitzui. Our question on the table is a very simple one. Is Mitzui essential? It's a machlokus between the Amoraim, and based on that machlokus, it's going to affect how we're going to read the Mishnah. If you think it's not essential, which is Rav Huna's position, so the Mishnah reads as we have presented, which is Huza Dama. If you're going to read it that Mitzui is essential, so then the Girsa of our Mishnah is Mitzah Dama. Good. Tashma. The Gemara would like to see whether or not we could prove either of these positions based on the following. Hanishar Bidam Yimatse El Yisod HaMizbeach Chatasi. Okay, we're reading the Pasuk where the Torah is giving us now clear instruction of what to do with the Chatas Oath. Any blood that's remained, says the Pasuk, Perikei and Vayikra, Yimatse El Yisod HaMizbeach. You do Mitzui, you squeeze the blood along the Mizbeach Chatasi. Now those extra two words at the end of the Pasuk Chatasi, what does that seem to indicate? This is part of the Chatas procedure. Sounds like from the Pasuk in the Torah, this is essential. This is not just Shirayim. This is not just some sort of add-on procedure. It sounds like this is the very essence of the Karban, to do Hazah and to do Mitzui. So the Pasuk works out very well for Rav Ada Bar Ava. However, Rav Huna, my Vahanishar, but according to Rav Huna, what are you going to do with the words Hanishar? In other words, it sounds like it's essential. So what you'll do is the following. You'll learn it like Rabbi Shmuel taught it to us. How did Rabbi Shmuel teach it to us? Not vihanishar, meaning we're not changing the words of the pasuk, not for a moment. What we're doing is we're just simply reinterpreting the pasuk. Vihanishar is to be understood as im nishar, meaning look, after the sprinkling of the blood, what you may have done, right, with a good whip, like I've ever done this before, but with a good whip, with a good crack of the wrist, so maybe what you're able to do is you're able to exhaust all the blood with the hazah, and maybe there's no blood left over in Mitzui, and what the Torah says is im nishar. Now, if there's any blood left over, so then you go through the procedure of squeezing, but it's not essential. That's the way we could understand the Torah. Umay chatasi. Now, when the Torah says chatasi, so what are you going to say about that? Aresha. That's not going on the Mitzui. That's going on all the stages prior to the Mitzui. Granted, it's a little bit of a, it's a little forced shot in the pasuk, because the Torah does say the word chatasi right after Mitzui. But what we're going to do is we're going to simply say that it applied, it's modifying the previous stages of the chatas of the chatas procedure, but not the Mitzui. Okay, so a defense of both positions, and where we're left right now is a machlokus. Whether or not Mitzui of the Chatzos HaOf is essential or not essential. Now, the Gemara says, now, is this a fair way to interpret the Torah? When it says Vehanishar, it means Im Nishar. Let's consider now the following. Vehanoseres. Hachanami she'im nitotar. When describing the Mincha, the Torah says Vehanoseres, and if there's left over. Now, you want to tell me that the pshat over there is just like what we said, meaning on the chance that there's left over? V'chitem an achinami, the Gemara says, that's untenable. V'atanya, as we now turn to the top of Tesam and Aleph. V'atanya, mi salta umi shamna akol levonta prat shechasra salta v'chasra shamna v'chasra levonta. So when it comes to taking off the kemitza, so what you have to do is you have to take off kemitza and you have to leave over residual amount. Meaning you have to leave over the shirayim, but it does not mean if there's anything left over. It means by definition you have to leave something over. So over there by the comments in the shirayim, clearly the hanoseres is not a if. It's this is what's supposed to be done. So now over here, when it comes to our dam chatas, when it says vehanishar, you want to tell me there's another way to read the Torah, that the Torah over there meant to say im nishar? It's not comparable. I gave away the answer. So it sounds like if I compare the two, so we are stuck. The Gemara says, okay, but they're not comparable. Amrei hasam k'siv anoseres k'ra yiser k'siv. So the Gemara's answer is actually pretty simple. That if you look carefully over there in the Pesukim regarding the comments and the Shirayim, it says it two times. Rashi. Amri Hasam Ksiv Anaseris Kray Yisera Tab Rashi Dechsiv Bev Anaseris Trey Zimne. It says it twice. Vanaseris Mimenu Vanaseris Mina Mincha. The Shina Alav Hakasiv La'akev. As a general rule, if the Torah is going to be repeating a point when it comes to Karbanos, that means essentiality. So there we have the repetition. So there we know it's essential. Masha'inkin, when it comes to the mitzvah, the Dam Chatzos, the Torah only says it one time, and so therefore it doesn't have to be essential. The Torah didn't say the word ve'im.
I know that.
Yeah, yeah.
Why do we have to interpret it as ve'im?
Because, no, but that's only a possible interpretation. It could mean, meaning, without Rabbi Yishmael, we could interpret it to mean, and this is what you do. Meaning it's just, and also, by the way, supporting the position that's essential, the Torah only waits till afterwards to say the words chatasi. That really does, that's strong indication that it's a fundamental part. It remains a machlokas. Let's just finish up to the Mishnah. Meisav avu d'shmuel la Rav Huna. The Gemara now is going to challenge the position of Rav Huna. Remember, Rav Huna says that it's not essential. Echad chatasov, echad ola sa'ov shemalkanu mitzah daman. Chutzim koman pasol. If I do the malika and the mitzui, chutzim koman with a machshav, chutzim koman become pasol ve'im bokaris, chutzim zman pigol, ve'chayav alav kares. So if while doing the avoda and having a machshava of pigol, so again, there's pigol chutzim zman, pigol chutzim komo, but for our purposes right now, what we just need to focus on is you've affected pigol. Now, what do we know regarding pigol? It's something fundamental to the world of pigol, which we've gone over time and again. Pigol is only going to be effective if I have the machshava of pigol during an avoda. An avoda is the avoda sadam by a animal karban. It's during shechita, kabbalah sadam, halacha, and zrika. And by a bird, it's going to be something which is comparable to these. And over here in the Braisa, what did we include? Mitsui. Oh. Okay, fine. So now you see the problem. Ketani mias mitza daman. So you see that mitsui over here is in the Braisa as part of the dam avoda, which sounds like it's essential. Okay, it's a problem. So humos of lahum afarikla. So he... Oh, okay, fine. So fine. So good. You have the Gemara also has answers. So humos of lahum afarikla. So the Gemara says, okay, so what I'll suggest is, let's dadin kitani, that when the Braisa is speaking, the Braisa over here is to be segmented, meaning that the machshavas pigol is not going on the mitzui, the machshavas pigol is going on the malika, and the mitzui is just simply a separate point to be made in the Braisa. Okay, so in other words, we're just simply going to take apart the Braisa. Gufa tana de Rav Yishmael she'in mishar b'dam v'ha tana de Rav Yishmael ha'sam shirayim ma'akvin v'amar ha'papa mitzui chatzasov ika b'inayhu. So the Gemara says we have another teaching by Rav Yishmael that mitzui is ma'akev. So what we have now is a stira between Rav Yishmael. We had Rav Yishmael on the bottom of the previous summer said that mitzui is not ma'akev. Now we have a brayso that says that mitzui is ma'akev. Trei tanai v'aliba de Rav Yishmael. So the Gemara says, okay, and what am I going to tell you? In terms of Rav Yishmael, we have different versions of whether or not Rav Yishmael holds that mitzui is ma'akev. Let's recap our day. We started the second parak of the Masechta, in which we're talking about where we did the karban of chatas ha'ov procedurally correct, and we're just looking at the various points of what happens when I go through every step of the chatas bird process. Step one, you're makdish the bird. Rashi said bepeh. And as a result of that, now it's eligible for me'ila. It now has kedushas ha'mizbech, and it's eligible for me'ila. Step two, you do the malika. Now that you did the malika, rendering it now, giving it the carbon status, it now has a higher level sensitivity towards tuma. If our tful yom or our mechusa kippurim were to touch it, it's going to be pasal, meaning it's going to become tame, but with a level, with a degree of tuma of a revi. The Gemara spends some time talking about that. And finally, after the hazas adam, so now it is edible by the kohanim. Subsequently, Mi'ila has been lifted, and also all the food psulim are going to take effect. Pigol, Noster, and Tame are all going to kick in at that point in time. Our three discussions in our Gemara: number one, the language of the Mishnah that says that if a tful yom or a mechusar kippurim to touch it, it'd be pasul as opposed to saying Tame. We try to fit that into the various opinions of the Tanaim, Abishal, Reb Meir, and the Chachamim. It seemingly fits in best with the Chachamim, although the Gemara was able to fit into the positions of Abishal and Reb Meir. Question number two, when Hazah is done, it says that Mi'ila is lifted off. What about the Isser being lifted off? Shouldn't the Mishnah say it even clearer that the Isser is lifted off? The Gemara gave a pshat in our Mishnah in terms of why it said it that way. And number three, our third topic of discussion today was vis-a-vis the The absence of mitzui in our Mishnah. Mitzui is part of the procedure of the Chatzos Hof. It's not mentioned in our Mishnah. Why isn't it mentioned in our Mishnah? So the simple pshat is that it's not ma'akev, which is in fact the opinion of some Amorayim. And in fact, it may in fact be the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel. On the other hand, the Gemara argued this point, whether mitzui is ma'akev or not ma'akev, and the Gemara ends it off as a debate.